You're listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya, and today we're talking books. Joining me in the studio is Anne Meadows, commissioning editor for Granter and Portobello Books. Anne, welcome to the show. We're going to begin today's show with the upcoming novel by beloved British author Zadie Smith. It's called Swing Time and explores the friendship between two girls. Anne, first of all, could you just fill us in a bit on the plot here?
Absolutely. So the plot of Swing Time is very simple. It begins with a woman who has been publicly disgraced. She's in her early 30s and she's fled back to St. John's Wood, and she's a northwest Londoner born and bred. And the novel takes you through her childhood friendship with another black girl called Tracy, and they grow up on neighbouring council estates. And Tracy is, from a very young age, an incredible dancer. She's very skillful, she's very dynamic. But she's from a fractured family. Her father isn't really on the scene. Her mother is quite a pushy, difficult woman who's determined that her daughter will succeed, but doesn't necessarily provide stability. Whereas our narrator, her mother is a brilliant black woman, a sort of self-taught intellectual, and she's worshipped by her father. And so you have the two contrasting lives of these girls, this intense friendship that they have and how it spirals out. And the novel ranges between this relationship between the narrator and Tracy, and then the narrator's relationship with two other brilliant women, one her mother and a pop star, a sort of Madonna figure called Amy, who's Australian, who she goes to work for as a PA after university. And if this sounds slightly, well, it swings, I suppose. It's not a straight chronology. We move about in time, we move about in place. And so sometimes we're in northwest London with these two young girls, and sometimes we're in a country near Senegal on the northwest African coast where Amy starts a girls' school, and sometimes we're in New York. And this swing, this movement between time and place, sort of replicates the feeling of modernity that many of us have, that we become, as we get older, rootless, and the narrator is someone who feels herself to be very rootless.
Interesting. And there's also kind of an interesting musicality here. I mean, Smith herself has a musical background. She's a keen jazz singer. And lots of people have noted this book for its kind of musicality. Does that come across in the prose, do you feel?
Yes, I think so. I mean, it's very lucid, clear prose. I was thinking back over Zadie Smith's previous books, and she's quite often quite formally experimental, quite funny. I mean, people compared N.W. to Ulysses by James Joyce because it had this free-flowing kind of jazzy movement to it. Swing Time is much more pared back. I think if it has an archetype, it would be, you know, the sort of classic realist novel meets Ferrante. It's these two girls and this interiority, and there's a slight distance or spaciness to it, which isn't, I think, present in her other work.
And Zadie Smith, I mean, is now considered, quite rightly, one of the titans of British literature. It's, I mean, how does this compare to some of her other works? I've read one review that said that this is her best work yet. Would you go that far, or do you think this kind of, or does it approach the levels of White Teeth and her some of her better works?
I mean, I think she's just changed so much. It's almost like comparing Radiohead albums. You know, each work is so distinct and brings something totally new and feels like she's challenging herself in new ways. I think it's an incredibly accomplished novel, and the way that it tackles these ideas of time and modernity. I mean, everyone in this book is on their smartphone the whole time, and this narrator loses whole years of her life in a sort of nothingness, which is terrifying but very familiar. You can sort of imagine people going back in 50 years' time and trying to understand the early 21st century by reading Zadie Smith. I mean, she's really chronicling modernity in that sense. I think White Teeth was such a different beast, and if you loved the kind of comedy and the riotousness of that, there might be aspects of Swing Time that disappoint you. But for me personally, and you know, I would compare her to Ferrante, it was a real joy to have such a acute portrait of someone's psychology and the ways they've been formed and these different tangles of relationships between women and how they affect each other. I thought it was really marvellous.
Swing Time by Zadie Smith is out on the 15th of November, published by Hamish Hamilton. Our second book is by Chilean writer Alejandro Zambra and takes the form of a standardized test. It's called Multiple Choice, and it's full of unanswerable language exercises that are designed to make the reader create meaning. And it sounds a bit confusing, I have to say. What's the idea behind the book?
The idea behind the book is very simple. So in 1993, I think, Alejandro Zambra was a student in Chile, and he had to take a aptitude test, which all students in Chile had to take at the time. And it's a multiple choice test, and it's incredibly fiendish. It's very difficult. And you spend your whole school life training for this one moment. And it of course, doesn't, like most tests, it doesn't really reflect anything of your intellect or your ability, but it defines the university you'll go to in the course of the rest of your life. So this book is modelled on that test, and it starts off with questions that have single word answers. You know, pick the word of these five words that does not relate to any of the other words, you know, standard multiple choice questions. And then those one word questions build up into sentence questions, and then questions where there are words missing and you, the reader, have to fill them in. And then eventually these sort of short story exercises, which are about boys cheating on tests, or men cheating on their wives and getting divorced, or a father who tells his son that he regrets him. So the form of the examination paper is sort of reflected by these tests of life that we fail and fail and fail.
So is the idea, do you think, that this is a fair reflection of how life actually is? Or do you think he's saying how ridiculous it is that we have these tests in life when life doesn't really work like that?
I think both. I mean, it's very funny. It's a very funny book, and the failures in it are sort of funny. But there's also a great deal of poignancy, I think, in the ways in which the narrators, because as the questions get longer, like narrators start to emerge, and men who can remember the number of freckles on a girl's back and are regretting losing her. You know, there's a kind of Juno Diaz vibe to it. I think that failure, although it's humorous, does, like you say, reflect life itself.
And does it actually, I mean, this structure, does it provoke useful thought, do you think? Or is it in danger of becoming slightly gimmicky? I mean, I use that word carefully, but, you know, do you see the question?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's almost like reading poetry. I think if you were to read it quickly and not partake in a way, it would maybe fall flat. But if you read it carefully and slowly and you put together the different questions, I mean, it's a book that rewards multiple readings, and it rewards sort of time and effort. It's incredibly short, it's sort of 100 pages, but if you were to do it properly, you could spend hours and hours on it. And I think the more time you spend with it, the richer it becomes. It's also just completely new. I mean, I had never before seen a novel laid out like an entrance examination. Maybe there will be lots now, but this is definitely the first.
And when you finally put it down, what did you kind of take away from it?
It made me want to be careful with my life, I think. I think that's the feeling. I mean, the last story is this man writing to his child to explain why he regrets having them. And it's very hard to read, and also sort of cruel. And then the questions afterwards in that exercise are kind of critiquing the man and taking him apart. And there are all these voices of these different students, sort of a very excoriating experience. But it makes you think, you know, that this sort of endeavor that we're all in, which has no answer and no conclusion and no graduation, I suppose, that we have to be very careful in it.
Multiple Choice by Alejandro Zambra is out now, published by Granter Books. Shirley Jackson was an American author who lived from 1916 until 1965. She was the author of six novels and has been dubbed the Queen of American Gothic. And why are we talking about Shirley Jackson today?
We're talking about Shirley Jackson partly because I have become obsessed with her over the last 6 months, and partly because it's the centenary of her birth this year, and that's sort of prompted a retrospective, I suppose. So Penguin have been reissuing Shirley Jackson's books as Penguin Modern Classics, as they deserve to be, and there's a new biography of her out. And in time for Halloween, they've released a book of her scariest stories in this adorable hardback edition, sort of perfect Halloween gift.
And in the kind of canon of ghost story writers, where does Jackson sit? And particularly, how does American Gothic also kind of, how does it compare to other forms of Gothic?
She's definitely up there with M.R. James and Edgar Allan Poe. I think what Shirley Jackson brings, and maybe another reason why her books are gaining in popularity, is a really deep and disturbing insight into what it is like to be a woman and a lost woman. I mean, her books are filled with this like empathy for wives whose husbands are cheating on them, or for unmarried women. To be an unmarried woman in your early 30s in a Shirley Jackson novel almost certainly means death. and she's very acute about female psychology and the sort of barbs of it. I'm reading her, she feels incredibly modern. So I think she deserves. I think she deserves this moment. I think she deserves to be celebrated.
And what is that difference between American Gothic and kind of other forms of Gothic, perhaps from Europe or slightly older forms as well?
That's interesting. I mean, she ranges. There are some stories that feel very European. There's one about these girls in this sort of castle that feels like it's set in the 19th century, and they're sort of dancing, and there's a male figure who's keeping them trapped there. But then, I think what she's really known for, and maybe what you mean by American Gothic, is kind of small town Gothic, like these very pleasant little villages where everyone's very sweet to each other. But then you find out that, you know, that the villagers are performing satanic rituals, or that there's a, you know, an old lady who's sending hate letters to everyone, and she's going to get her comeuppance.
And for any listeners who are kind of new to Jackson, haven't heard of her before, where's a good place to start, do you think?
I think there are two. There's a short story called The Lottery, which was published in The New Yorker in 1948, and is probably her most famous story. And I read it for the first time this year. And I don't think I've been that frightened by anything for a very, very long time. It's a story about a village where every year they get together and perform a sacrifice. I won't tell you what's sacrificed, but it's really, really chilling. And then there's a novel called We Have Always Lived in the Castle, which is about two sisters who live in this big house, and again, in a small town where everyone knows everyone's business and no one will speak to them. And you find out that it's because a few years before, the whole family sat down to dinner and only these two girls survived. And it's a masterpiece of Gothic paranoia, you know, as you gradually work out who may be killed whom. But it's also incredibly sensitive to these sisters and their relationship and their love for one another, which provides this sweetness to what otherwise would be an incredibly dark book.
Well, if you're in need of some Halloween reading, then Dark Tales by Shirley Jackson is out now, published by Penguin Classics. Her biography by Ruth Franklin has been published by Liverite. Now, of course, we couldn't end today's show without discussing briefly the winner of one of the biggest literary events of the year, the Man Booker Prize. On Tuesday evening, it was announced that Paul Beattie took home the prize for his book, The Sellout, making him the first American writer to do so. And very quickly, what did you actually make of this year's event and this year's winner?
I think it's a great winner. It's very, very funny. It's riotous. I think the first line is, "This might surprise you, coming from a black man, but I have never stolen anything." And it continues in that vein. I mean, it's sort of sexual humor and racial humor, and it's kind of an indecent book in a lot of ways, but it's also very poignant about race relations in America and the experience of race. So it's anarchic and it's strange, and it's probably not, it definitely wasn't the favorite, and it wasn't a book that I think very many people would have put their money on, but it's a worthy winner, certainly.
Well, we have an interview with the winner, Paul Beattie. Here he is speaking to Georgina Godwin.
I met Marlon James in Brooklyn, and I can't remember if he had been nominated or if he'd already won, but just in talking to him, and I saw him in Jamaica. We did this festival together, and he had just a nice glow to him, and the way that people treated him, I was like, oh, yeah, this Man Booker thing is a big deal, and he deserved it. And so I just got a sense from watching others around him, kind of. He was himself. And so that was like a thing that first clicked in. And then when I met my publisher and how honored she was, and even though she's been shortlisted, I guess, 2 years in a row, and she's very nervous and wants me to say the right thing and do all the right thing, all the stuff that I'm loath to do. But you know, it's a big deal for her, and you know, just this everything that's been here. And what a nice thing is, you know, doing these interviews in Australia and Ireland, you know, in India. You know, there's another international component to it, you know, for reasons we don't need to get into necessarily. So that's you know, something that, you know, the States is a very kind of misanthropic place in a weird way when it comes, you know, it's kind of, yeah, when it comes to the arts, you know, it's us and that's it a little bit, you know. So, yeah, it's definitely a big deal.
That was Man Booker Prize winner Paul Beattie speaking to Georgina Godwin there. Listen out for the full interview on the future episode of Meet the Writers. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to my guest, Anne Meadows. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. This show was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for our film review. But for now, goodbye from me, and thanks very much for listening.